bicycle, you didn't have no shoes. Now you're walking around like you're from big news. You've been awful careful about the friends you choose, but you won't find my name in your book of who's who. I'm not just a fool, son. Freak out! Freak out! That's your seven soul. That's your seven soul. That's your seven soul. That's your seven soul. You're trying to make a mark in society. You're using all the tricks that you used on me. Magazines, the clothes you're wearing, girl, are causing public scene. I'm not just a fool.
Mickey Dolan singing the live version from I'm a Steppin' Stone. In the early 60s, American television was awash in the images of British flop-top rockers singing cover versions of old Little Richard songs and original tunes. When the Beatles appeared on the Ed Sullivan Show, we were all mesmerized, transfixed by something intangible but palpable. TV producers must have seen the same thing. And when the Beatles movies came out, with the Beatles running all over the screen, something must have clicked for Bob Raffleson and Bert Schneider. They put out a call for actor musicians and created the Monkees. The group shot to the top of the TV and music charts, and Mickey Dolenz was happy when John Lennon compared the Monkees to the Marx Brothers. Eventually, the show was canceled. The music slowed, but it never entirely stopped. Mickey Dolenz has put together an account of his Monkees career and more in I'm a Believer. He joins us this morning on Weekday.
Hello.
Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, and what a marvelous introduction.
I remember.
How accurate.
I remember those shows. I was one of the fans of the Monkees shows.
And well, thank you.
I remember my parents going, what?
Yeah.
But all of us 8 and 9 year olds,
sure,
we understood it. It was our level.
Yeah, well, exactly. It was meant to be. That was the audience that Bob Raffleson and Bert Schneider, as you mentioned, were going for. It was actually the younger sibling, the younger sisters and brothers of the Beatle fans, because the Beatles had left the pop market, left kind of a vacuum when they went on to Sgt. Pepper and Magical Mystery Tour and stuff like that. And so there was this kind of vacuum left, which the Monkees filled. But one of the reasons I wrote the book is to kind of, you know, dispel some of the nasty rumors about the group. I object to words like manufactured and fabricated and all that, because the Monkees was not a group, and the Monkees was a television show about a group, much in the same way that Star Trek was a television show about astronauts. And comparing the Monkees to the Beatles is like comparing William Shatner to Neil Armstrong. Both are extremely valid in their context, but entirely different.
You always saw it as a TV show.
It was a TV show.
As an actor.
It was a TV show. Not that I saw it like that.
But you guys got the tour.
Absolutely. Well, that's the interesting, I think, the interesting story about the Monkees, is that here, what started out as this television show, this fantasy, became reality. Life imitating art, imitating life. I always equate it to Leonard Nimoy really becoming a Vulcan. Because, yes, you just heard that was the live version. And we did 200 concert dates. Only about a year after we were cast into the show. Jimi Hendrix was the opening act, and we did it all. That was the other thing that I wanted to set straight, is the fact that we didn't play. I mean, there was rumors that we didn't.
That was the rap, that you didn't know how to play.
We didn't play or sing, which is entirely not true. It's just total BS. We certainly did. The castings were extensive. The audition process was extensive. It was like casting a Broadway musical. There was not only acting, of course, but there was singing, there was musicianship. I played guitar at the time, rock and roll guitar.
Well, you
I had a rock group at the time.
You had to become a drummer.
Yeah. So
they asked you to change.
Exactly. They said, you have to be the drummer. I said, but I play guitar. And they said, we have a plethora of guitar players. You have to play the drums. I was quite used to that. It'd be like being cast in the Will Rogers Follies and having to learn to spin a rope. It's not brain surgery. None of it. You know, this is only show business. So let's not take it all too seriously. But yeah, I played guitar, and they said, you're the drummer. So in that sense, yeah, I approached it as an entertainer, not just an actor, because, as I say, singing and music was an integral part of it, but as an entertainer being cast into a show. And I guess like Sal Mineo in the Gene Krupa story, or more recently Dennis Quaid in the Jerry Lewis movie. Oh, he didn't even bother to learn the piano, I shouldn't think, but I did, because I knew we were going to go on the road. I mean, I don't know what the producers had in mind. If we couldn't have played at all, I think that we probably would never have gone on the road. Or if we had, we would have had a backing band, and we'd have just stood up in front
and sang. Did they know when they created the show that it would have, that it would go to that level, that you'd be touring? It caught them by surprise?
Well, yeah, I mean, it always does. You never know. I mean, they didn't know if the thing was going to sell. The pilot was going to sell. You know, only 1 or 2 out of 10 pilots, you know, sold back in those days. So it almost didn't get on the air, the Monkees. But, I mean, they were clever, like I say. They knew what they wanted to do. They did want to capture the spirit of what was going on the streets. With thousands of rock and roll bands springing up. I mean, everybody was in a rock and roll band. That's the kind of thing they wanted to capture. The Monkees was never famous on television. We were always an out-of-work, struggling, starving rock and roll band. A garage band, a grunge band, if you like. One of the first, I suppose. And the producers, when they cast it, I think what they had in mind was to try and find personalities, you know, people that would jump out of the screen at you. And if they could find people that could act and sing and play and do it all, then that would be a great bonus.
And you each had those roles assigned. I think in the book you talked about how Peter Tork had maybe the hardest part because he was the mm-hmm. Harpo-like character.
Yeah, but that is a character that he used to do on stage in his act, his musical act. So none of us were playing, except for Peter. You know, he did have more, like, as you say, he did have more of a character to play. The other three of us, were more or less, extrapolations or caricatures of ourselves.
When the show ended, did you guys ever at any time try to stay together? You sort of came and went in pairs and threes.
Configurations, yeah.
It seems like there was a lot of tension. You sort of allude to a lot of tension in the book at some point.
Well, there was always a creative tension. There always is in things like this. There better be, or else you're in trouble. The Monkees was a television show, and the whole project was driven by this television show. So, yeah, we got together after the show was canceled. We still had to fulfill some contractual obligations, and we had to, obviously we were still getting offers to tour, and the fantasy had become the reality because in every sense of the word, we were a group now. Leonard Nimoy had really become a Vulcan. And that's the equivalent, you know, which, again, I think is the fascinating story behind it. Because not until Spinal Tap has anything like that ever happened.
Well, what was it? You guys made a movie. You made Head written by Jack Nicholson and Bob Raffleson. I mean, you were in the ether. You were up there with the stars.
Yeah, it was big, you know. And like you say, it's still going on. I mean, like a few years ago, there was this massive reunion tour. I mean, I'm just writing this book. There's an acute interest in it because I think the fans, especially the kids, like you say, the kids your age stuff and older, they got it. They understood what was going on. The only people that didn't, that went right over their heads, was the media. A lot of the music media, especially, who take their rock and roll very seriously. And it just went, you know, right over. They had no idea.
Well, you had a lot of hit songs. I'm amazed that we look at the platinum and quintuple platinum albums that the Monkees sold. Some of those songs were written by other song
Boyce and Hart,
and Neil Diamond wrote I'm a Believer, which I did not know.
Oh, yeah, most of the songs were written by other writers until later on when we started getting our hand into it. Because at a certain point, we kind of put our foot down. I go on in the book about it a bit, especially Mike Nesmith and Peter, who had come from more musical background, and they didn't feel that they were being satisfied. Their musical ambitions were not being satisfied, and they kind of said, this is enough is enough. But, yeah, the songs were written by Carole King, wrote most of the big hits. Neil Diamond, as you say, Boyce and Hart, John Stewart, Neil Sedaka, Paul Williams, Harry Nilsson had his first hit with us. I mean, wonderful writers, and that's one of the reasons I think this stuff stands up so well, because those people don't write a lot of duff tunes.
You still sing every once in a while, don't you?
Oh, a lot, yeah.
And a solo career and as the Monkees, or various incarnations of the Monkees.
Incarnations, yeah, right. Yeah, I just had an album out last year on Rhino, Mickey Dolenz Puts You to Sleep, which is lullabies, children's lullabies. I'm doing another one called Mickey Does the Musicals, which is unique versions of some famous show tunes, again for Rhino Records. And I'm on the road. I have a band, a rock and roll band, and I go out and do my rock and roll concert. And
well, after the Monkees, you went to England. You were a producer. You were a director. You've never really left the show business in any sense.
No, I've been in show business virtually my entire life. I even did some prenatal work.
That's right. You were Circus Boy. That's why you had the experience for the casting. You were Circus Boy back in the 50s.
Back in the 50s, yeah. That's long before your time.
That's where you had to learn how to ride an elephant.
Yeah, I went on the road. Actually, I took the elephant and I went on the road and did a concert tour back then. The elephant would do a bunch of tricks. I'd sing a few songs on my guitar, Purple People Eater, and stuff like that. And the elephant would spin around and jump up and down and turn around and go down on one knee. And then some guy would come on with a wheelbarrow and pick up after him. And
did that kind of tour prepare you for the later the Monkees?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Well, the experience did. Yeah, because I'd been through...
Another animal act. I was just...
Well, right.
Yeah,
It did, in a way, prepare me. Not so much for the success, but that helps. But for the downside, after the success, because everything has a half-life, and there's the natural kind of bell curve. This thing just goes up and down. And after Circus Boy, I was taken out of the business by my parents, which is a very smart thing to do. And after the Monkees, I kind of took myself out of the business, that end of the business, because I knew there wasn't any chance I'd get any legitimate acting jobs. I went to a few interviews, and they said, what are you doing here? We don't need any drummers, at home. Oh, no. So
you'd been typecast.
Oh, yeah, terribly. Yeah. Not just me. I mean, all the other members of the cast and... lots of other members of lots of other casts in Hollywood, to use the Leonard Nimoy reference again. He wrote a book about it, I Am Not Spock. It's a real problem. The trick is not getting bitter about it, because it's something that it's created by your own success. The inertia is created by the very success you've strived for so hard. And the more successful you are, the bigger the problem, in a way. I mean... And I know, as a producer-director, I've been on the other side of the desk, and people come in, and they've had a very successful show. They've created this marvelous character. And you wonder, well, I don't know. I mean, if I put him in my show, are people going to say, I mean, to this day, if I see Sean Connery in a movie, I go, what's James Bond doing in that movie, or Christopher Reeve, What's Superman doing in this, romantic comedy? Well, when's he going to take his shirt off or something? It's this... It's a very classic, kind of cliched problem, stereotyping and typecasting. There's not a lot you can do with it except stuff like I'm doing now.
We're talking with Mickey Dolenz. He's author of I'm a Believer, My Life of Monkees, Music, and Madness. Was there a lot of madness when you were rehearsing some of the shows, when you had to come up with some of the bits? A lot of times you were improvising.
Mostly we were improvising. And in a funny way, it's a very disciplined kind of environment. In order to create a spontaneous happening, you have to have an awful lot of discipline. You have to contain it. It's like having a little fusion reaction. You have to. It takes an enormous amount of energy to contain this thing and to keep it going, not either burn out or melt down. What they did, the producers, they created this little environment for us where we were allowed to basically just run free, and they filmed it. And most of the stuff they use on the show are the outtakes, that's the stuff they wanted. But it's also one of the reasons why it only lasted a couple of years, because it nearly killed us. I mean, to improvise like that 10 hours a day is exhausting. It's like doing a stand-up act 10 hours a day. We were always on, always on our toes, always trying to, always going for that spontaneous moment that, it was very difficult.
Was that same experience... Was the experience the same when you did Head that you, Ravelson and Jack Nicholson wrote? Did you also do some...
not as much, but yeah, we still did improvise. It got down to a science, where there would be a script, but we would know intuitively and instantly, who should say what line and how and why and when and where. I mean, it was like clockwork. There wasn't quite as much on Head, because I was kind of more dramatic. There was actually some drama in Head, So that was slightly different. That took a little more classic acting, techniques. But on the television show, especially, it did get pretty crazy. I mean, it was, other actors would come on the set. I remember once, and directors, Jerry Lewis came on the set once to visit the set, and he was being considered as a director. Or he was considering whether or not he would direct an episode or two, and he came on the set and took one look and said, "No way." We killed a couple of directors. It's like they...
When you look back on it, what are you proudest of? Are you proudest of the TV and the acting and the improvising network,
that's a good
or the
question.
Music?
That's a good question. I was the most comfortable on the set, probably, because that was my history as of an actor. But then again, I think playing the concerts, our first concert tour was 200 dates. Jimi Hendrix was our opening act. And if you listen to that live 67 album, you really get a sense of what was going on. The reproduction's terrible, but I don't know where they got that tape from. But it's just the four of us, out there all alone, totally naked to the world, only having been put together or cast in this thing for, at that time about a year. So I'm extremely proud of that because it sounds damn good, all things considered. And the music, like I say, the music stands up much, which had a lot to do with the songwriters. I guess it's a little bit of everything. The whole project was pretty cool.
Did you like working with Jimi Hendrix? Did you get to play with him at all?
Oh, sure. Not on stage. It was we jammed a lot,
His star was rising while he was touring with you.
Well, yeah, he broke his record on the tour and then started headlining on his own, yeah. Yeah, I'd seen him in... I saw him in New York first playing lead guitar for the John Hammond Band. And, people were saying, "Hey, you got to come down and see this guy play guitar with his teeth." That was his claim to fame at the time. And I went down, and sure enough, there he was playing guitar with his teeth, wearing a suit or something like that. And then a few months later, he was at Monterey Pop Festival. He'd put the experience together. And we needed an opening act, and I said he'd be kind of cool. He's very theatrical, and he was that character. He was playing a character, as it were, in his act. It was a very theatrical kind of an act. And I guess he appreciated us for the same thing, because we did a very theatrical stage show. Back then, we had a big screen on stage, 40-foot screen, and we had like 5 costume changes and, all kinds of shtick. It was, pretty theatrical, and I guess he appreciated that. It was pretty weird. If you can imagine, the kids didn't.
Not the same audience.
No. Well, the kids, I think, actually probably were the same kids that eventually became his fans, except at the time, of course, no one knew who he was. And opening for an act like the Monkees back then, or the Beatles, or the Stones, or, is tough. It's really very difficult for any act. I saw Axl Rose open for the Stones and get trashed, booed off the stage. People are there to see the opening act, and it's very difficult. We had the Fifth Dimension open for us, and we had Ike and Tina Turner open for us. It's tough for all of them because 90% of that audience, 99% of the audience is there to see the opening act. And Jimi Hendrix would go into Purple Haze, Purple Haze coming in my way. We want Davy. We want Davy. Foxy Lady. We want the Monkees. It was very embarrassing, I must say.
Mickey Dolenz, his book is I'm a Believer, My Life of Monkees, Music, and Madness. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
This is Weekday.
Here we come, walking down the street. We get the funniest looks from everyone we meet. Hey, hey, we're the Monkees. And people say we monkey around. But we're too busy singing to put anybody down. We go wherever we want to, do what we like to do. We don't have time to get restless, there's always something new. Hey, hey, we're the Monkees, and people say we monkey around. But we're too busy singing to put anybody down.